and be a queen.
Jamie. The king sat at the head of the table, a stack of cushions under his arse, signing each document as it was presented to him. "Only a few more, Your Grace," Sir Kevin Lannister assured him. "This is a bill of attainder against Lord Edmure Tully, stripping him of River Run and all its lands and incomes, for rebelling against his lawful king. This is a similar attainder against his uncle, Sir Brynden Tully the Blackfish." Tommen signed them one after the other, dipping the quill carefully and writing his name in a broad, childish hand. Jamie watched from the foot of the table, thinking of all those lords who aspired to a seat on the king's small council. "They can bloody well have mine." If this was power, why did it taste like tedium? He did not feel especially powerful, watching Tommen dip his quill into the inkpot again. He felt bored. And sore. Every muscle in his body ached, and his ribs and shoulders were bruised from the battering they'd gotten, courtesy of Sir Adam Marbrand. Just thinking of it made him wince. He could only hope the man would keep his mouth shut. Jamie had known Marbrand since he was a boy serving as a page at Castle Rock. He trusted him as much as he trusted anyone, enough to ask him to take up shields and tawny swords. He had wanted to know if he could fight with his left hand. "And now I do." The knowledge was more painful than the beating that Sir Adam had given him, and the beating was so bad he could hardly dress himself this morning. If they had been fighting in earnest, Jamie would have died 24 deaths. It seemed so simple, changing hands. It wasn't. Every instinct he had was wrong. He had to think about everything, where once he'd just moved. And while he was thinking, Marbrand was thumping him. His left hand couldn't even seem to hold a longsword properly. Sir Adam had disarmed him thrice, sending his blade spinning. "This grants said lands, incomes, and castle to Sir Eamon Frey and his lady wife, Lady Jenna." Sir Kevin presented another sheath of parchments to the king. Tommen dipped and signed. "This is a decree of legitimacy for a natural son of Lord Roose Bolton of the Dreadfort, and this name's Lord Bolton, your warden of the north." Tommen dipped, signed, dipped, signed. "This grants Sir Rolf Spicer title to the castle Castamere and raises him to the rank of lord." Tommen scrawled his name. "I should have gone to Sir Ilion Payne," Jamie reflected. The king's justice was not a friend as Marbrand was, and might have beat him bloody, but, without a tongue, he was not like to boast of it afterward. All it would take would be one chance remark by Sir Adam in his cups, and the whole world would soon know how useless he'd become. "Lord Commander of the King's Guard." It was a cruel jape, that, though not quite so cruel as the gift his father had sent him. "This is your royal pardon for Lord Gawain Westerling, his lady wife, and his daughter Jane, welcoming them back into the king's peace," Sir Kevin said. "This is a pardon for Lord Jonas Bracken of Stonehenge. This is a pardon for Lord Vance. This for Lord Goodbrook. This for Lord Mouton of Maidenpool." Jamie pushed himself to his feet. "You seem to have these matters well in hand, Uncle. I shall leave his grace to you." "As you wish." Sir Kevin rose as well. "Jamie, you should go to your father. This breach between you is his doing. Nor will he mend it by sending me mocking gifts. Tell him that, if you can pry him away from the Tyrells long enough." His uncle looked distressed. "The gift was heartfelt. We thought it might encourage you. To grow a new hand?" Jamie turned to Tommen. Though he had Joffrey's golden curls and green eyes, the new king shared little else with his late brother. He inclined to plumpness. His face was pink and round, and he even liked to read. "He is still shy of 9, this son of mine. The boy is not the man. it would be 7 years before Tummen was ruling in his own right. Until then, the realm would remain firmly in the hands of his lord grandfather. "Sire," he asked, "do I have your leave to go?"
"As you like, Sir Uncle."
Tommen looked back to Sir Kevin.
"Can I seal them now, Great Uncle?"
Pressing his royal seal into the hot wax was his favourite part of being king, so far. Jaime strode from the council chamber. Outside the door, he found Sir Meryn Trant, standing stiff at guard in white scale armour and snowy cloak.
"If this one should hear how feeble I am, or Kettle Black, or Blunt should hear of it—"
"Remain here until his grace is done," he said. "Then escort him back to Magor's." Trant inclined his head.
"As you say, my lord."
The outer ward was crowded and noisy that morning. Jaime made for the stables, where a large group of men were saddling their horses.
"Steelshanks," he called, "are you off then?"
"As soon as my lady is mounted," said Steelshanks Walton. "My lord of Bolton expects us. Here she is now."
A groom led a fine grey mare out of the stable door. On her back was mounted a skinny, hollow-eyed girl wrapped in a heavy cloak. Grey it was, like the dress beneath it, and trimmed with white satin. The clasp that pinned it to her breast was wrought in the shape of a wolf's head with slitted opal eyes. The girl's long brown hair blew wild in the wind. She had a pretty face, he thought, but her eyes were sad and weary. When she saw him, she inclined her head.
"Sir Jaime," she said in a thin, anxious voice, "you are kind to see me off."
Jaime studied her closely.
"You know me, then?"
She bit her lip.
"You may not recall, my lord, as I was littler then, but I had the honour to meet you at Winterfell when King Robert came to visit my father, Lord Eddard."
She lowered her big brown eyes and mumbled,
"I'm Arya Stark."
Jaime had never paid much attention to Arya Stark, but it seemed to him that this girl was older.
"I understand you're to be married."
"I am to wed Lord Bolton's son, Ramsay. He used to be a Snow, but his grace has made him a Bolton. They say he's very brave. I'm so happy."
"Then why do you sound so frightened?"
"I wish you joy, my lady." Jaime turned back to Steelshanks. "You have the coin you were promised?"
"Aye, and we've shared it out. You have my thanks."
The Northman grinned.
"A Lannister always pays his debts."
"Always,"
said Jaime, with a last glance at the girl. He wondered if there was much resemblance. Not that it mattered. The real Arya Stark was buried in some unmarked grave in Flea Bottom, in all likelihood. With her brothers dead and both parents, who would dare name this one a fraud?
"Good speed,"
he told Steelshanks. Nage raised his peace banner, and the Northmen formed a column as ragged as their fur cloaks and trotted out the castle gate. The thin girl on the grey mare looked small and forlorn in their midst. A few of the horses still shied away from the dark splotch on the hard-packed ground, where the earth had drunk the life's blood of the stable-boy Gregor Clegane had killed so clumsily. The sight of it made Jaime angry all over again. He had told his king's guard to keep the crowd out of the way, but that oaf, Sir Boris, had let himself be distracted by the duel. The fool boy himself shared some of the blame, to be sure, the dead Dornishman as well, and Clegane most of all. The blow that took the boy's arm off had been mischance, but that second cut.
"Well, Gregor is paying for it now."
Grand Maester Pycelle was tending to the man's wounds, but the howls heard ringing from the maester's chambers suggested that the healing was not going as well as it might.
"The flesh mortifies, and the wounds ooze pus,"
Pycelle told the council.
"Even maggots will not touch such foulness. His convulsions are so violent that I have had to gag him to prevent him from biting off his tongue. I have cut away as much tissue as I dare. and treated the rot with boiling wine and bread mould, to no avail. The veins in his arm are turning black. When I leeched him, all the leeches died. My lords, I must know what malignant substance Prince Oberon used on his spear. Let us detain these other Dornishmen until they are more forthcoming.
Lord Tywin had refused him. There will be trouble enough with Sunspear over Prince Oberon's death. I do not mean to make matters worse by holding his companions captive.
Then I fear Sir Gregor may die.
Undoubtedly. I swore as much in the letter I sent to Prince Doran with his brother's body. But it must be seen to be the sword of the king's justice that slays him, not a poisoned spear. Heal him.
Grand Maester Pycelle blinked in dismay.
My lord, heal him!
Lord Tywin said again, vexed. You are aware that Lord Varys has sent fishermen into the waters around Dragonstone. They report that only a token force remains to defend the island. The Lycini are gone from the bay, and the great part of Lord Stannis's strength with them.
Well and good, announced Pycelle. Let Stannis rot in Lys, I say. We are well rid of the man and his ambitions.
Did you turn into an utter fool when Tyrion shaved your beard? This is Stannis Baratheon. The man will fight to the bitter end, and then some. If he is gone, it can only mean he intends to resume the war. Most likely he will land at Storm's End and try to rouse the Storm Lords. If so, he's finished. But a bolder man might roll the dice for Dawn. If he should win Sunspear to his cause, he might prolong this war for years. So we will not offend the Martells any further, for any reason. The Dornishmen are free to go, and you will heal Sir Gregor.
And so the mountain screamed day and night. Lord Tywin Lannister could cow even the stranger, it would seem. As Jaime climbed the winding steps of the White Sword Tower, he could hear Sir Boris snoring in his cell. Sir Balon's door was shut as well. He had the king tonight, and would sleep all day. Aside from blunt snores, the tower was very quiet. That suited Jaime well enough. I ought to rest myself. Last night, after his dance with Sir Adam, he had been too sore to sleep. But when he stepped into his bedchamber, he found his sister waiting for him. She stood beside the open window, looking over the curtain walls and out to sea. The bay wind swirled around her, flattening her gown against her body in a way that quickened Jamie's pulse. It was white, that gown, like the hangings on the wall and the draperies on his bed. Swirls of tiny emeralds brightened the ends of her wide sleeves and spiraled down her bodice. Larger emeralds were set in the golden spider-web that bound her golden hair. The gown was cut low to bare her shoulders and the tops of her breasts.
She is so beautiful.
He wanted nothing more than to take her in his arms.
Cersei! He closed the door softly. Why are you here?
Where else could I go? When she turned to him, there were tears in her eyes. Father's made it clear that I am no longer wanted on the council. Jaime, won't you talk to him? Jaime took off his cloak and hung it from a peg on the wall.
I talk to Lord Tywin every day.
Must you be so stubborn? All he wants is to force me from the king's guard and send me back to Casterly Rock. That need not be so terrible. He is sending me back to Casterly Rock as well. He wants me far away, so he'll have a free hand with Tommen. Tommen is my son, not his.
Tommen is the king.
He is a boy, a frightened little boy, who saw his brother murdered at his own wedding.
and now they are telling him that he must marry. The girl is twice his age and twice a widow.
He eased himself into a chair, trying to ignore the ache of bruised muscles.
The Tyrells are insisting. I see no harm in it. Tommen's been lonely since Marcella went to Dawn. He likes having Marjorie and her ladies about. Let them wed.
He is your son.
He is my seed. He's never called me father, no more than Joffrey ever did. You warned me 1,000 times never to show any undue interest in them.
To keep them safe, you as well. How would it have looked if my brother had played the father to the king's children? Even Robert might have grown suspicious.
Well, he's beyond suspicion now.
Robert's death still left a bitter taste in Jamie's mouth.
It should have been me who killed him, not Cersei.
I only wished he'd died at my hands,
when I still had 2 of them.
If I'd let kingslaying become a habit, as he'd like to say, I could have taken you for my wife for all the world to see. I'm not ashamed of loving you, only of the things I've done to hide it. That boy at Winterfell.
Did I tell you to throw him out of the window? If you'd gone hunting as I begged you, nothing would have happened. But no, you had to have me. You could not wait until we returned to the city.
I'd waited long enough. I hated watching Robert stumble to your bed every night, always wondering if maybe this night he'd decide to claim his rights as husband.
Jaime suddenly remembered something else that troubled him about Winterfell.
At River Run, Catelyn Stark seemed convinced I'd sent some footpad to slit her son's throat, that I'd given him a dagger.
That, she said scornfully. Tyrion asked me about that.
There was a dagger. The scars on Lady Catelyn's hands were real enough. She showed them to me. Did you...
Oh, don't be absurd. Cersei closed the window.
Yes, I hoped the boy would die. So did you. Even Robert thought that would have been for the best.
We kill our horses when they break a leg, our dogs when they go blind. But we are too weak to give the same mercy to crippled children, he told me. He was blind himself at the time, from drink.
Robert.
Jaime had guarded the king long enough to know that Robert Baratheon said things in his cups that he would have denied angrily the next day.
Were you alone when Robert said this?
You don't think he said it to Ned Stark, I hope.
Of course we were alone, us and the children.
Cersei removed her hairnet and draped it over a bedpost, then shook out her golden curls.
Perhaps Marcella sent this man with a dagger, do you think so?
It was meant as mockery, but she'd cut right to the heart of it, Jaime saw at once.
Not Marcella. Joffrey.
Cersei frowned. Joffrey had no love for Robb Stark, but the younger boy was nothing to him. He was only a child himself.
A child hungry for a pat on the head from that sot you let him believe was his father.
He had an uncomfortable thought.
Tyrion almost died because of this bloody dagger. If he knew the whole thing was Joffrey's work, that might be why...
I don't care why, Cersei said. He can take his reasons down to hell with him.
If you had seen how Joff died... He fought, Jaime, he fought for every breath. But it was as if some malign spirit had its hands about his throat. He had such terror in his eyes. When he was little, he'd run to me when he was scared or hurt, and I would protect him. But that night, there was nothing I could do. Tyrion murdered him in front of me, and there was nothing I could do.
Cersei sank to her knees before her chair and took Jaime's good hand between both of hers.
Joff is dead, and Marcella's in Dawn. Tommen's all I have left. You mustn't let Father take him from me, Jaime, please.
Lord Tywin has not asked for my approval. I can talk to him, but he will not listen.
He will, if you agree to leave the King's Guard.
I'm not leaving the King's Guard.
His sister fought back tears.
Jaime, you're my shining knight. You cannot abandon me when I need you most. He's stealing my son, sending me away, and unless you stop him, father is going to force me to wed again.
Jamie should not have been surprised, but he was. The words were a blow to his gut, harder than any Sir Adam Marbrant had dealt him.
Who?
Does it matter? Some lord or other? Someone father thinks he needs?
I don't care. I will not have another husband. You are the only man I want in my bed ever again.
Then tell him that.
She pulled her hands away.
You're talking madness again. Would you have us ripped apart, as mother did that time she caught us playing? Tommen would lose the throne, Marcella her marriage. I want to be your wife. We belong to each other. But it can never be, Jamie. We are brother and sister.
The Targaryens... We are not Targaryens.
Quiet, he said scornfully. So loud, you'll wake my sworn brothers.
We can't have that now, can we?
People might learn that you had come to see me.
Jamie, she sobbed, don't you think I want it as much as you? It makes no matter who they wed me to. I want you at my side. I want you in my bed. I want you inside me. Nothing has changed between us. Let me prove it to you.
She pushed up his tunic and began to fumble with the laces of his breeches.
Jamie felt himself responding.
No, he said, not here.
They'd never done it in the White Sword Tower, much less in the Lord Commander's chambers.
Cersei, this is not the place.
You took me in the sept. This is no different.
She drew out his cock and bent her head over it. Jamie pushed her away with a stump of his right hand.
No, not here, I said.
He forced himself to stand. For an instant he could see a confusion in her bright green eyes, and fear as well. Then rage replaced it.
Cersei gathered herself together, got to her feet, straightened her skirts. Was it your hand they hacked off at Harrenhal, or your manhood?
As she shook her head, her hair tumbled around her bare white shoulders. I was a fool to come. You lacked the courage to avenge Joffrey. Why would I think that you'd protect Tommen? Tell me, if the imp had killed all three of your children, would that have made you wroth?
Tyrion is not going to harm Tommen or Marcella. I am still not certain he killed Joffrey.
Her mouth twisted in anger.
How can you say that? After all his threats...
Threats mean nothing. He swears he did not do it.
Oh, he swears. Is that it? And dwarfs don't lie. Is that what you think?
Not to me. No more than you would.
You great golden fool. He's lied to you a thousand times, and so have I.
She bound up her hair again and scooped up the hairnet from the bedpost where she'd hung it.
Think what you will. The little monster is in a black cell, and soon Sir Ilion will have his head off. Perhaps you'd like it for a keepsake.
She glanced at the pillow.
He can watch over you as you sleep alone in that cold white bed, until his eyes rot out, that is.
You had best go, Cersei. You are making me angry.
Oh, an angry cripple. How terrifying, she laughed.
A pity Lord Tywin Lannister never had a son. I could have been the heir he wanted, but I lack the cock. And speaking of such, best tuck yours away, brother. It looks rather sad and small, hanging from your breeches like that. When she was gone, Jamie took her advice, fumbling one-handed at his laces. He felt a bone-deep ache in his phantom fingers.
I've lost a hand, a father, a son, a sister, and a lover. And soon enough, I will lose a brother. And yet they keep telling me, House Lannister won this war.
Jamie donned his cloak and went downstairs, where he found Sir Boris Blunt having a cup of wine in the common room.
When you've done with your drink, tell Sir Loras I'm ready to see her.
Sir Boris was too much of a coward to do much more than glower.
You are ready to see who?
Just tell Loras.
I, Sir Boris drained his cup, I, Lord Commander.
He took his own good time about it, though, or else the Knight of Flowers proved hard to find.
Several hours had passed by the time they arrived, the slim, handsome youth and the big, ugly maid. Jamie was seated alone in the round room, leafing idly through the white book.
"Lord Commander," Sir Loris said, "you wish to see the Maid of Tarth?"
"I did." Jamie waved them closer with his left hand. "You have talked with her, I take it?"
"As you commanded, my lord."
"And?" The lad tensed.
It may be it happened as she says, sir, that it was Stannis. I cannot be certain."
"Varys tells me that the Castellan of Storm's End perished strangely as well," said Jamie. "Sir Courtney Penrose," said Brian sadly, "a good man." "A stubborn man. One day he stood square in the way of the King of Dragonstone. The next he leapt from a tower." Jamie stood. "Sir Loras, we will talk more of this later. You may leave Brian with me." The wench looked as ugly and awkward as ever, he decided, when Tyrell left them. Someone had dressed her in woman's clothes again, but this dress fit much better than that hideous pink rag the goat had made her wear.
"Blue is a good colour on you, my lady," Jamie observed. "It goes well with your eyes." "She does have astonishing eyes."
Brian glanced down at herself, flustered.
"Scepter Dunnies padded out the bodice to give it that shape. She said you sent her to me."
She lingered by the door, as if she meant to flee at any second.
"You look
different," he managed a half-smile. "More meat on the ribs and fewer lice in my hair, that's all. The stump's the same. Close the door and come here." She did as he bid her. "The white cloak is new, but I'm sure I'll soil it soon enough."
"That wasn't... I was about to say that it becomes you."
She came closer, hesitant.
"Jamie, did you mean what you told Sir Loras about King Renly and the shadow?"
Jamie shrugged. "I would have killed Renly myself if we'd met in battle. What do I care who cut his throat?"
"You said I had honor. I'm the bloody Kingslayer, remember? When I say you have honor, that's like a whore vouchsafing your maidenhood."
He leaned back and looked up at her. "Steelshanks is on his way back north to deliver Arya Stark to Roose Bolton."
"You gave her to him?" she cried, dismayed. "You swore an oath to Lady Catelyn."
"With a sword at my throat? But never mind. Lady Catelyn's dead. I could not give her back her daughters, even if I had them. And the girl my father sent with Steelshanks was not Arya Stark."
"Not Arya Stark?
You heard me. My lord father found some skinny northern girl, more or less the same age, with more or less the same colouring. He dressed her up in white and grey, gave her a silver wolf to pin her cloak, and sent her off to wed Bolton's bastard." He lifted his stump to point at her. "I wanted to tell you that before you went galloping off to rescue her and got yourself killed for no good purpose. You're not half bad with a sword, but you're not good enough to take on 200 men by yourself." Brian shook her head.
"When Lord Bolton learns that your father paid him with false coin..."
"Oh, he knows. Lannisters lie, remember? It makes no matter. This girl serves his purpose just as well. Who is going to say that she isn't Arya Stark? Everyone the girl was close to is dead, except for her sister, who has disappeared."
"Why would you tell me all this, if it's true? You are betraying your father's secrets."
"The Hand's secrets," he thought. "I no longer have a father."
"I pay my debts like every good little lion. I did promise Lady Stark her daughters, and one of them is still alive. My brother may know where she is, but if so, he isn't saying. Cersei is convinced that Sansa helped him murder Joffrey."
The wench's mouth got stubborn.
"I will not believe that gentle girl a poisoner. Lady Catelyn said she had a loving heart. It was your brother. There was a trial, Sir Loris said.
Two trials, actually. Words and swords both failed him. A bloody mess.
Did you watch from your window? My cell faces a sea. I heard the shouting, though.
Prince Oberon of Dorne is dead. Sir Gregor Clegane lies dying, and Tyrion stands condemned before the eyes of gods and men. They're keeping him in a black cell till they kill him.
Brian looked at him. You do not believe he did it?
Jaime gave her a hard smile.
See, wench, we know each other too well.
Tyrion's wanted to be me since he took his first step, but he'd never follow me in kingslaying. Sansa Stark killed Joffrey. My brother's kept silent to protect her. He gets these fits of gallantry from time to time. The last one cost him a nose. This time it will mean his head.
No, Brian said, it was not my lady's daughter. It could not have been her.
There's the stubborn, stupid wench that I remember. She reddened.
My name is Brian of Tarth,
Jaime sighed.
I have a gift for you.
He reached down under the Lord Commander's chair and brought it out, wrapped in folds of crimson velvet. Brian approached as if the bundle was like to bite her, reached out a huge freckled hand, and flipped back a fold of cloth. Rubies glimmered in the light. She picked the treasure up gingerly, curled her fingers around the leather grip, and slowly slid the sword free of its scabbard. Blood and black the ripple shone. A finger of reflected light ran red along the edge.
As this Valyrian steel? I've never seen such colors.
Nor I. There was a time that I would have given my right hand to wield a sword like that. Now it appears I have. So the blade is wasted on me. Take it. Before she could think to refuse, he went on, A sword so fine must bear a name. It would please me if you would call this one Oathkeeper. One more thing. The blade comes with a price. Her face darkened.
I told you I will never serve such foul creatures as us.
Yes, I recall.
Hear me out, Brian.
Both of us swore oaths concerning Sansa Stark. Cersei means to see that the girl is found and killed wherever she has gone to ground. Brian's homely face twisted in fury.
If you believe that I would harm my lady's daughter for a sword, you—
Just listen, he snapped, angered by her assumption. I want you to find Sansa first, and get her somewhere safe. How else are the two of us going to make good our stupid vows to your precious dead Lady Catelyn? The wench blinked.
I know what you thought.
Suddenly Jaime was sick of the sight of her.
She bleats like a bloody sheep.
When Ned Stark died, his great sword was given to the king's justice, he told her. But my father felt that such a fine blade was wasted on a mere headsman. He gave Sir Ilion a new sword, and had ice melted down and reforged. There was enough metal for two new blades. You're holding one. So you'll be defending Ned Stark's daughter with Ned Stark's own steel, if that makes any difference to you.
Sir, I owe you an apology.
He cut her off. Take the bloody sword and go, before I change my mind. There's a bay mare in the stables, as homely as you are, but somewhat better trained. Chase after Steelshanks, search for Sansa, or ride home to your Isle of Sapphires. It's not to me. I don't want to look at you any more.
Jaime, Kingslayer, he reminded her.
Best use that sword to clean the wax out of your ears, wench. We're done. Stubbornly she persisted.
Joffrey was your my king. Leave it at that.
You say Sansa killed him? Why protect her?
Because Joff was no more to me than a squirt of seed in Cersei's cunt, and because he deserved to die. I have made kings and unmade them. Sansa Stark is my last chance for honor. Jaime smiled thinly. Besides, kingslayers should band together. Are you ever going to go?
Her big hand wrapped tight around Oathkeeper. I will. And I will find the girl and keep her safe, for her Lady Mother's sake, and for yours.
She bowed stiffly, whirled, and went. Jaime sat alone at the table, while the shadows crept across the room. As dusk began to settle, he lit a candle and opened the white book to his own page. Quill and ink he found in a drawer. Beneath the last line Sir Barristan had entered, he wrote in an awkward hand that might have done credit to a six-year-old being taught his first letters by a maester.
Defeated in the Whispering Wood by young wolf Robb Stark during the War of the Five Kings, held captive at River Run, and ransom for a promise unfulfilled. Captured again by the brave companions, and maimed at the word of Vargo Hoat, their captain. Losing his sword hand to the blade of Zolo the Fat, return safely to King's Landing by Brienne, the Maid of Tarth. When he was done, more than three-quarters of his page still remained to be filled between the gold lion on the crimson shield on top and the blank white shield at the bottom. Sir Gerald Hightower had begun his history, and Sir Barristan Selmy had continued it. But the rest Jaime Lannister would need to write for himself. He could write whatever he chose henceforth. Whatever he chose. John. The wind was blowing wild from the east, so strong the heavy cage would rock whenever a gust got it in its teeth. It skirled along the wall, shivering off the ice, making John's cloak flap against the bars. The sky was slate grey, the sun no more than a faint patch of brightness behind the clouds. Across the killing ground he could see the glimmer of a thousand campfires burning, but their light seemed small and powerless against such gloom and cold. A grim day. Jon Snow wrapped gloved hands around the bars and held tight as the wind hammered at the cage once more. When he looked straight down past his feet, the ground was lost in shadow, as if he were being lowered into some bottomless pit. Well, death is a bottomless pit, of sorts, he reflected, and when this day's work is done, my name will be shadowed forever. Bastard children were born from lust and lies, men said. Their nature was wanton and treacherous. Once John had meant to prove them wrong, to show his Lord Father that he could be as good and true a son as Rob. I made a botch of that. Rob had become a hero king. If John was remembered at all, it would be as a turncloak, an oathbreaker, and a murderer. He was glad that Lord Eddard was not alive to see his shame. I should have stayed in that cave with regret. If there was a life beyond this one, he hoped to tell her that. She will claw my face the way the eagle did, and curse me for a coward. But I'll tell her all the same. He flexed his sword hand, as Maester Aemon had taught him. The habit had become part of him, and he would need his fingers to be limber, to have even half a chance of murdering Mance Raider. They had pulled him out this morning, after 4 days in the ice, locked up in a cell, 5 by 5 by 5, too low for him to stand, too tight for him to stretch out on his back. The stewards had long ago discovered that food and meat kept longer in the icy storerooms carved from the base of the wall, but prisoners did not.
"You will die in here, Lord Snow,"
Sir Alistair had said just before he closed the heavy wooden door, and John had believed it. But this morning they had come and pulled him out again, and marched him, cramped and shivering, back to the King's Tower, to stand before Jowly Janus Slint once more.
"That old maester says I cannot hang you," Slint declared. "He has written Cutter Pike, and even had the bloody gall to show me the letter. He says you are no turncloak."
"Aymans live too long, my lord," Sir Alistair assured him. "His wits have gone dark as his eyes."
"Aye," Slint said, "a blind man with a chain about his neck. Who does he think he is?"
"Aemon Targaryen," John thought. "A king's son, and a king's brother, and a king who might have been." But he said nothing.
"Still," Slint said, "I will not have it said that Janus Slint hanged a man unjustly. I will not. I have decided to give you one last chance to prove you are as loyal as you claim, Lord Snow. One last chance to do your duty, yes?"
He stood.
"Mance Rayder wants to parley with us. He knows he has no chance now that Janus Slint has come, so he wants to talk. This king beyond the wall. But the man is craven, and he will not come to us. No doubt he knows I'll hang him. Hang him by his feet, from the top of the wall on a rope 200 feet long. But he will not come. He asks that we send an envoy to him."
"We're sending you, Lord Snow," Sir Alistair smiled.
"Me?" John's voice was flat. "Why me?"
"You rode with his wildlings," said Thorne. "Mance Rayder knows you. He will be more inclined to trust you."
That was so wrong, John might have laughed.
"You've got it backwards. Mance suspected me from the first. If I showed up in his camp, wearing a black cloak again, and speaking for the night's watch, he'll know that I betrayed him."
"He asked for an envoy. We're sending one," said Slint. "If you are too craven to face this turncloak king, we can return you to your ice cell. This time without the furs, I think. Yes?"
"No need for that, my lord," said Sir Alistair.
"Lord Snow will do as we ask. He wants to show us that he's no turncloak. He wants to prove himself a loyal man of the Night's Watch."
Thorne was much the more clever of the two, John realized. This had his stink all over it. He was trapped. "I'll go," he said, in a clipped, curt voice.
"My lord,"
Janus Slint reminded him,
"you'll address me."
"I'll go, my lord. But you are making a mistake, my lord. You are sending the wrong man, my lord. Just the sight of me is going to anger Mance. My lord would have a better chance of reaching terms if he sent..."
"Terms?"
Sir Alistair chuckled.
"Janus Slint does not make terms with lawless savages, Lord Snow. No, he does not."
"We're not sending you to talk with Mance Rayder," Sir Alistair said. "We're sending you to kill him."
The wind whistled through the bars, and John Snow shivered. His leg was throbbing, and his head. He was not fit to kill a kitten. Yet here he was. The trap had teeth. With Maester Aemon insisting on John's innocence, Lord Janus had not dared to leave him in the ice to die. This was better. "Our honour means no more than our lives, so long as the realm is safe," Carn Halfhand had said in the Frostfangs. He must remember that. Whether he slew Mance, or only tried and failed, the free folk would kill him. Even desertion was impossible, if he'd been so inclined. To Mance, he was a proven liar and betrayer. When the cage jerked to a halt, John swung down onto the ground and rattled Longclaw's hilt to loosen the bastard blade in its scabbard. The gate was a few yards to his left, still blocked by the splintered ruins of the turtle, the carcass of a mammoth ripening within. There were other corpses, too, strewn amidst broken barrels, hardened pitch, and patches of burnt grass, all shadowed by the wall. John had no wish to linger here. He started walking toward the wildling camp, past the body of a dead giant whose head had been crushed by a stone. A raven was pulling out bits of brain from the giant's shattered skull. It looked up as he walked by.
"Snow!"
it screamed at him.
"Snow! Snow!"
Then it opened its wings and flew away. No sooner had he started out than a lone rider emerged from the wildling camp and came toward him. He wondered if Mance was coming out to parley in No Man's Land. That might make it easier, though nothing will make it easy. But as the distance between them diminished, John saw that the horseman was short and broad, with gold rings glinting on thick arms and a white beard spreading out across his massive chest.
"Har!"
Tormund boomed when they came together.
"Jon Snow, the crow! I feared we'd seen the last of you."
"I never knew you feared anything, Tormund." That made the wildling grin.
"Well said, lad. I see your cloak is black. Mance won't like that. If you've come to change sides again, best climb back on that wall of yours."
"They've sent me to treat with the king beyond the wall."
"Treat?" Tormund laughed. "Now, there's a word. Mance wants to talk. That's true enough. Can't say he wants to talk with you, though."
"I'm the one they've sent."
"I see that. Best come along, then. You want to ride?"
"I can walk."
"Your fort is hard here."
Tormund turned his garron back towards the wildling camp.
"You and your brothers, I'll give you that. 200 dead and a dozen giants. Mag himself went in that gate of yours and never did come out."
"He died on the sword of a brave man named Donal Noy."
"Aye, some great lord was he, this Donal Noy, one of your shiny knights in their steel small clothes."
"A blacksmith. He only had one arm."
"A one-armed smith slew Mag the Mighty? That must have been a fight to see. Mance will make a song of it, see if he don't."
Tormund took a waterskin off his saddle and pulled the cork.
"This will warm us some. To Donal Noy and Mag the Mighty."
He took a swig and handed it down to John. "To Donal Noy and Mag the Mighty." The skin was full of mead, but a mead so potent that it made John's eyes water and sent tendrils of fire snaking through his chest. After the ice cell and the cold ride down in the cage, the warmth was welcome. Tormund took the skin back and downed another swig, then wiped his mouth.
"The Magnar of Sen swore us that he'd have the gate wide open, so all we'd need to do was stroll through singing. He was going to bring the whole wall down."
"He brought down part," said John, "on his head."
"Ha-ha!" said Tormund. "Well, I never had much use for stir. When a man's got no beard, no hair, no ears, you can't get a good grip on him when you fight."
He kept his horse at a slow walk, so John could limp beside him.
"What happened to that leg?"
"An arrow. One of regrets, I think."
"That's a woman for you. One day she's kissing you, the next she's filling you with arrows."
"She's dead."
"Aye?"
Tormund gave a sad shake of the head.
"A waste. If I'd been 10 years younger, I'd have stolen her myself. That air she had, oh, well, the hottest fires burn out quickest."
He lifted the skin of mead.
"To regret. Kiss by fire."
He drank deep. "To regret. Kiss by fire," John repeated when Tormund handed him back the skin. He drank even deeper.
"Was it you? Killed her?"
"My brother." John had never learned which one, and hoped he never would.
"You bloody crows!"
Tormund's tone was gruff, yet strangely gentle.
"That long spear stole me daughter, Munda, me little autumn apple. Took her right out of me tent, with all four of her brothers about. Torreg slept through it, the great lout, and Torwin, well, Torwin the tame, that says all it needs saying, don't it? The young ones gave the lad a fight, though."
"And Munda?" asked John.
"She's me own blood," said Tormund proudly. "She broke his lip for him, and bit one ear half off, and I hear he's got so many scratches on his back he can't wear a cloak. She likes him well enough, though. And why not? He don't fight with no spear, you know. Never has. So where do you think he got that name, eh?"
John had to laugh. Even now, even here. Ygritte had been fond of Longspear Rick. He hoped he'd found some joy with Tormund's Munda. Someone needed to find some joy somewhere. "You know nothing, Jon Snow," Ygritte would have told him. "I know that I'm going to die," he thought. "I know that much at least."
"All men die," he could almost hear her say. "And women too, and every beast that flies, or swims, or runs. It's not the when of dying that matters. It's the how of it, Jon Snow."
"Easy for you to say," he thought back. "You died brave in battle, storming the castle of a foe. I'm going to die a turncloak and a killer." Nor would his death be quick, unless it came on the end of Mansa's sword. Soon they were among the tents. It was the usual wildling camp, a sprawling jumble of cook fires and piss-pits, children and goats wandering freely, sheep bleating among the trees, horse hides pegged up to dry. There was no plan to it, no order, no defences, but there were men and women and animals everywhere. Many ignored him, but for everyone who went about his business, there were 10 who stopped to stare. Children squatting by the fires, old women in dog carts, cave dwellers with painted faces, raiders with claws and snakes and severed heads painted on their shields, all turned to have a look. John saw spear wives, too, their long hair streaming in the piney wind that sighed between the trees. There were no true hills here, but Mansraider's white fur tent had been raised on a spot of high stony ground right on the edge of the trees. The king beyond the wall was waiting outside, his ragged red and black cloak blowing in the wind. Harmer Dogshead was with him, John saw, back from her raids and feints along the wall. And Varamyr Sixskins as well, attended by his shadow cat and 2 lean grey wolves. When they saw who the watch had sent, Harmer turned her head and spat, and one of Varamyr's wolves bared its teeth and growled.
"You must be very brave or very stupid, Jon Snow," Mansraider said, "to come back to us wearing a black cloak."
What else would a man of the Night's Watch wear?
"Kill him," urged Harmer. "Send his body back up in that cage of theirs, and tell him to send us someone else. I'll keep his head for my standard. A turncoat's worse than a dog."
"I warned you he was false."
Vadimir's tone was mild, but his shadow cat was staring at John hungrily through slitted grey eyes.
"I never did like the smell of him."
"Pull in your claws, beastling!"
Tormund Giantsbane swung down off his horse.
"The lad's here to hear. You lay a paw on him. Might be I'll take that shadow-skin cloak I've been wanting."
"Tormund Crow-lover," Harmer sneered. "You are a great sack of wind, old man."
The skin-changer was grey-faced, round-shouldered, and bald, a mouse of a man with a wolfling's eyes.
"Once a horse is broken to the saddle, any man can mount him," he said in a soft voice. "Once a beast been joined to a man, any skin-changer can slip inside and ride him. Orel was withering inside his feathers, so I took the eagle for my own,
but the joining works both ways, Warg. Orel lives inside me now, whispering how much he hates you, and I can soar above the wall and see with eagle eyes.
So we know, said Mance. We know how few you were when you stopped the turtle. We know how many came from Eastwatch. We know how your supplies have dwindled. Pitch, oil, arrows, spears. Even your stare is gone. And that cage can only lift so many. We know. And now you know we know.
He opened the flap of his tent.
Come inside. The rest of you, wait here.
What, even me? Said Tormund.
Particularly you. Always.
It was warm within. A small fire burned beneath the smoke holes, and a brazier smouldered near the pile of furs, where Darla lay, pale and sweating. Her sister was holding her hand. Val, John remembered. I was sorry when Jarl fell, he told her. Val looked at him with pale grey eyes.
He always climbed too fast.
She was as fair as he remembered. Slender, full-breasted, graceful, even at rest, with high, sharp cheekbones and a thick braid of honey-coloured hair that fell to her waist.
"Dallas Tame is near,"
Mance explained.
"She and Val will stay. They know what I mean to say."
John kept his face as still as ice. Foul enough to slay a man in his own tent under truce. Must I murder him? In front of his wife, as their child is being born? He closed the fingers of his sword hand. Mance was not wearing armor, but his own sword was sheathed on his left hip. And there were other weapons in the tent, daggers and dirks, a bow and a quiver of arrows, a bronze-headed spear lying beside that big black horn. John sucked in his breath.
A war horn, a bloody great war horn.
Yes, Mance said, the horn of winter, that Joramon once blew to wake giants from the earth.
The horn was huge, 8 feet along the curve and so wide at the mouth that he could have put his arm inside up to the elbow. If this came from an oryx, it was the biggest that ever lived. At first he thought the bands around it were bronze, but when he moved closer, he realized they were gold. Old gold. More brown than yellow, and graven with runes. Ygritte said you never found the horn.
Did you think only crows could lie? I liked you well enough for a bastard, but I never trusted you. A man needs to earn my trust.
John faced him. If you've had the horn of Joramon all along, why haven't you used it? Why bother building turtles and sending fens to kill us in our beds? If this horn is all the songs say, why not just sound it and be done? It was Darla who answered him. Darla, great with child, lying on her pile of furs beside the brazier.
We free folk know things you kneelers have forgotten. Sometimes the short road is not the safest, Jon Snow. The Horn Lord once said that sorcery is a sword without a hilt. There is no safe way to grasp it.
Mance ran a hand along the curve of the great horn.
No man goes hunting with only one arrow in his quiver, he said. I had hoped that Stur and Jarl would take your brothers unawares and open the gate for us. I drew your garrison away with feints and raids and secondary attacks. Bormarsh swallowed that lure, as I knew he would. But your band of cripples and orphans proved to be more stubborn than anticipated. Don't think you've stopped us, though. The truth is, you're too few and we are too many. I could continue the attack here, and still send 10,000 men to cross the Bay of Seals on rafts, and take Eastwatch from the rear. I could storm the Shadow Tower, too. I know the approaches as well as any man alive. I could send men and mammoths to dig out the gates of the castles you've abandoned, all of them at once.
Why don't you, then? John could have drawn Longclaw then, but he wanted to hear what the wildling had to say.
"Blood," said Mance Rayder. "I'd win in the end, yes, but you'd bleed me, and my people have bled enough."
"Your losses haven't been that heavy,"